Welcome to Inside the Castle, the podcast that goes behind castle doors to have real conversations with real people about solving the nation's toughest challenges.
I'm one of your hosts today, Marie Kopka.
And I'm Aaron Schneider.
Welcome back to our People First series, where we celebrate unity, empowerment, and the Corps' greatest asset, our people. Today, we're diving into an essential and potentially a lesser known role within the Corps of Engineers. It's the work of our tribal liaisons.
I'm really excited about this episode, Marie, because I know when I was in St. Paul District, we started working a little bit more with the tribal liaison and trying to build the program. And I saw how important it was to build relationships with the tribal nations, but also to address the infrastructure needs on these tribal nations that have really been forgotten. And I think being able to provide programs and support to these nations has been really valuable for just infrastructure investment, but also the relationship building. So really excited to hear what our experts have to say about this today.
Yeah, awesome. And joining us today is Melissa Leslie of the Seattle District and Sean O'Donnell with the Alaska District, who work directly with the tribal nations and with Alaska Native communities. And so we'll hear more about their experiences and their successes and some hopes for the future for our tribal, federal, and Alaska Native relationships. So thank you both for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to get into our topic, but before we dive into it, could you both tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you got to be tribal liaisons?
Well, I started as a planner with the Seattle District about 15 years ago. My first project was a dual purpose ecosystem restoration and flood risk management project where one of the non-federal sponsors was a Native American tribe. So after working as a planner and also as an environmental coordinator for many years, I started asking for opportunities to support our district tribal liaison at the time, who is the great Lori Morris. And she was able to mentor me on the Seattle District program, which she actually built. And she introduced me to many of the tribes in our area of responsibility. So now the Seattle District has a team in our tribal liaison office. I am the lead and I supervise two other team members. And we also have a fantastic team in our regulatory branch that focuses on concerns tribes have with permit applications. On a personal note, my grandfather was Blackfeet and grew up on the reservation of Montana. My mom and my uncles are enrolled tribal members. So I am honored to be the tribal liaison for the Corps, both on a personal and a professional level.
Yeah, thanks everyone. And thanks for the question. I have maybe a little different route coming in. I have a fairly diverse background. I'm fairly new to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. I've only been in this role as the tribal liaison for about a year and a half. Prior to that, I served in the Alaska District Regulatory Division. And well before that, I've worn many hats as a teacher, special education, a park ranger in Denali National Park, a park manager, a law enforcement officer. But more specifically to working with Alaska Native tribes and families, I spent some time in Juneau, Alaska, working for the Office of Family Services, assisting Alaska Native families with adoption and guardianship finalization. And honestly, I was much like teaching. It was one of the most rewarding and challenging positions I've had to date. And it really highlighted the need, you know, across many aspects that we have to continue to provide support and become better partners as government agencies with all Indigenous peoples, but specifically here in Alaska, since this is where I'm at. And the opportunity opened up when my predecessor moved on to a different position. And honestly, I think I had no idea that I would even get an opportunity at the position. I took a chance that I'd hoped to shadow prior to that. I've always had a great interest in providing that help. But you know, this is a very challenging and big complex program up here. And the reality is, I think I was the only one who raised my hand and they gave me the opportunity. And it's just been an absolute honor. It is, you know, it's extremely challenging every day, but I work with a great group of people. You know, since I've only been in the position for a year and a half, there's still many tribal entities that I have yet to meet and work with. But the ones I have worked with, it's just been eye-opening. And again, just the opportunity to work in this position and be of any level of assistance is an honor and a pleasure. And one of the more rewarding positions I've had to date. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you both for sharing more about your personal backgrounds, your history, and kind of what inspired you to do this work. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about like the role of the tribal liaison, like what is the work that you're actually doing? And then Sean, kind of more geared for you, does the work with Native communities is the same or different compared to working with tribal nations? John, maybe you can start off. And then also, is it Native Alaskan or Alaskan Native? Maybe you can kind of speak to that too.
Sure. So I'll start with that first. So it's Alaskan Native when we're speaking of the indigenous people of Alaska. Native Alaskan is kind of more encompassing. It includes indigenous people as well as anybody who's basically born and raised in Alaska. So it's not necessarily interchangeable, but it's a very common mistake that folks make. But when we speak to the indigenous people, it's Alaska Native villages, Alaska Native tribes, Alaska Native corporations, so on and so forth. Regarding my role, I primarily serve as a resource for the Alaska Native, and I say tribal entities because it is very encompassing up here in Alaska. And I also serve as a resource for USAIS employees. Vast majority of our work here in Alaska impacts the Alaska Native community, so effective and timely communication is absolutely critical here. Essentially, I help the tribal entities navigate the Corps of Engineers, and in turn, I do my best to provide the employees tools and training needed to uphold our federal trust responsibility. And I try to do that consistently and respectfully. We have project managers here that generally are the ones that are primarily working with our tribal entities, and we have very unique challenges, as I've stated before. 229 federally recognized tribes, 12 Alaska Native regional corporations, roughly 198 Alaska Native village corporations, 12 regional Alaska Native nonprofits. All of those entities we provide government-to-government consultation with. So trying to do that in an effective, respectful, and consistent manner in a state that's over 665,000 square miles, I believe, it can be pretty challenging. But it is important to note on that as challenging as it is for us, we have far more resources at our disposal than our tribal partners. And they have to navigate countless project submissions coming in from federal, state, local, private entities, and all of which, or at least the majority of which, are filled with technical language and acronyms. I know in the Corps, we love acronyms, which drives me crazy. A big part of, again, what I do is try to be a resource for those. Instead of, you know, something we've done in the past as a federal agency is we rely on each individual agency to do their part, you know, without coordinating. And we kind of expect or leave it on the tribes to have to deal with that. So I do my best to do that work for them. So even if it's something outside the scope of the Corps of Engineers, or something that's on, you know, the purview of another agency, I do everything I can to coordinate those other agencies and entities and resources so that they do not have to. And it's less of a burden on our employees, less of a burden on our tribal partners. So I would say that's a rough summary of the day-to-day of the tribal liaison in the Alaska District.
Well, in Seattle District, we do not have as many tribal nations. We have 50 in our area of responsibility, but they are very active tribes. And I'll speak just a little bit more on the liaising part of our job. It really is making sure that communication is happening between our district staff and our tribal partners. our programs are vast and wide, and there are so many nuances to our authorities versus our appropriations, and making sure that tribes understand how we can partner with them or how we can help is a big part of our job, but also helping to educate our staff on when we should, you know, engage our tribal partners, which is the very beginning of a project or an action, making sure that we reach out as soon as possible so that we can get their feedback and make it a better project or action. Another part of my job in Seattle District is helping with trainings. So helping with, we do a small training for our new employee orientation, which helps just introduce our relationships and our trust responsibility to our new employees, which has been somewhat of a new introduction to that training, but it seems to be helping a lot in just letting folks have an overarching idea of how important these relationships are. And then I'm also a member of the corporate board, and I get to help sit in on those meetings and help make decisions and lead where our district is going for the future.
Thanks. I was thinking about when you guys were talking about like how we build these relationships. And I remember when I worked in St. Paul, when we would go to work with the tribal nations, they were frankly pretty skeptical of working with the U.S. Army in one and, you know, being the federal government. And it seemed like it really took a lot to break down barriers and increase that communication and just understanding the culture and traditions and how we, you know, need to interact with those and some of the ceremonial aspects that we had. So I was wondering, knowing that each tribal nation, Alaska Native communities really are different entities in these government to government relations, like how do you go about building the relationships individually with each one?
Sure. So, you know, as you just stated, there's no way to, you know, this is not a monolith here. There's a great deal of complexity across the state. And so to really simplify it, it's honesty and usefulness. Sometimes we get caught up. So speaking to usefulness, you know, sometimes we get caught up in the limitations of our program. And I spoke to earlier, there's a great deal of outside resources to be had. So when we meet with the tribal government for the first time or the 13th time, you know, it's very important to have an understanding, a basic understanding of culture and some of the traditions when you're going into these meetings with tribal government and elders. But it's also almost equally as important to be useful. When you come into these meetings, you need to be prepared to speak again outside of what your program provides. If you really want to work, especially somebody new like myself who's coming in, you know, starting fresh, and they see constantly, you know, every few years they're seeing a new person. So when we come into these meetings, you have to do some research and find out what programs are going to be useful for this tribal government and the people they represent. So I kind of serve as a conduit for that. And then additionally, honesty is crucial here. You know, we work with the federal government, and honest communication sounds simple enough, but as you know, it can be tricky, right? Doing it in a way that's still respectful of our organization, but also doing it in a way to where we can build that trust with the Alaska Native communities. You know, in many cases, we won't come to an agreement regarding the outcomes of certain projects, and I have limitations as a largely advisory position. But I do everything I can to make sure that the tribal partners are up to date on every turn, right? So Melissa spoke to this earlier. So making sure that they're aware of projects as soon as we know about them, and they have as much information as I can provide. And then if and when there is bad news, I do everything I can to make sure they have it as soon as possible so they can prepare. And I do everything I can to make sure they're aware of what their options are and what tools are available to them. Oftentimes, honestly, they're very difficult conversations. But I think we go a long way when they understand that they can count on my position to provide that information, good or bad, consistently.
And I'll just build a little bit on what Sean was saying. Communication. That is my biggest role as a liaison. both with staff and with tribes. So making sure that if I get a phone call from a tribal staff member or even a tribal member responding right away that day, within, you know, a couple hours if possible, even if it's just to say I don't know the answer to the question or I'm working on it, I'm going to find the right person and we will get back to you as soon as we can. Just making sure that they know they're being heard, that they have someone working on their questions, that helps to build trust. The same thing with going into staff level meetings or even nation to nation meetings, making sure that we're prepared, that we have some of the history of the projects that we've worked on with them in the past, potentially, or what are their concerns. I have the responsibility to help find those answers, help educate our staff or our commanders before going into those meetings. And then also just, again, not shying away from the tough conversations, being honest and realistic with what we can do to help or what we can't do to help. Is there a middle ground? Can we find ways to work together? And sometimes, like Sean said, there might not be a good or satisfactory answer, but being honest about it and letting, you know, our partners know is much better than just avoiding the subject. And
thank you for that. It sounds like there's a lot of different skills that you need to use as a tribal liaison. Definitely communication, you're hitting on that pretty hard. Active listening, knowing about the breadth of core programs and thinking beyond, like what can you do to kind of add value to this conversation you're having or this relationship. So in all their conversations with just different tribal nations, could you tell us a little bit about what you've learned are some of the unique challenges that the tribes and Alaska Native communities are facing when they're working with us and other federal entities? And what could you do in your role, or what could we do to help navigate through those challenges?
So I think some of the unique challenges that I have witnessed in my role in the Seattle District is just that there are so many different federal agencies and different federal programs that, you know, tribes could partner with, and it's very difficult for them to navigate that labyrinth. Working with CORE, typically we're not a granting agency, we're a partnering agency. So helping to educate tribes on our programs, our authorities, and finding the right fit can be a challenge. And if not, trying to see maybe there's another federal agency they can go to. But tribes also have typically have limited staff members. And so they don't have the time to research all the different federal programs and maybe don't know who to reach out to. So I think that is a very big challenge for them to navigate within the federal program. And they have been asking for help for many, many years on how to do that. And I think the federal family is trying to figure out ways to help them navigate, but we still have a long way to go on that.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. I have to go through a little bit of a history lesson. It's pretty important to the story of what some of the Alaska Native tribes face here as far as challenges. So in general, with some exceptions, Alaska Native tribes do not own land. There's no reservations except for one, Metlakatla, on Annette Island Reserve. There's no treaties in Alaska, so again, pretty unique. Instead, as a result of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971, Aboriginal title was actually extinguished, and for-profit Native corporations were formed in lieu of reservation systems. And with that came roughly 44 million acres of land and around $1 billion. So all that was used for the corporations to divide up and use to start up said corporations. And again, generally speaking, because there are exceptions, regional corporations, which are the larger corporations, of which there are 12, they have subsurface rights to the land, and the village corporations themselves own the surface rights. Again, some exceptions. So when Alaska Native tribes wish to consult on a project or looking to partner, It can be very complex because of the land issue. So most of them do not have direct land ownership. So we're dealing with whether it's the Bureau or Native corporations or other landowners that they have to work through to really be at the table and have these discussions. And of course, you know, dealing with the Corps of Engineers, there's not a defined boundary with those tribes, though there is specific language that speaks to Alaska Native villages, that being in proximity to Alaska Native villages. Again, it's not really well defined. So when there's federal projects that are impacting said tribes, it's tricky. It really pushes the boundaries of effective, you know, of what we need to do with effective government to government consultation. Because if we don't do that correctly, those projects and that consultation will ultimately fail. Additionally, as I stated before, a lot of these Native villages are in extremely remote areas that are cut off from road access. Perhaps you can only fly in and or out or boat, and there's extreme weather and communications are limited. You know, you combine that with very limited staffing in some occasions, and then subsistence seasons, it's very hard. So I guess in my role, I do my best to lessen the burden for our tribal partners by, again, taking the lead anywhere I can and trying to make sure that our staff understand some of these complications that, you know, our tribal partners are facing, because they have deadlines they're trying to meet on our side. And I think a lot of times they don't understand what the tribal partners are up against in just trying to get to a project summary, much less being able to respond to it. So yeah, it's tricky up here, but we do our best, and our tribal partners most certainly have a difficult task, but we're all doing our best to work together and find a path forward.
Listening to the two of you talk, it makes me think, you know, how rewarding this job could be. It seems like you've got a lot of challenges, but you're really doing great work. And I was wondering, what initiative are you most proud of in your work as a tribal liaison?
Well, I survived year one. That was a big proud moment. No, in all seriousness, it's, you know, as I said, it's a very challenging position. And but I did have predecessors who were extremely talented, did a tremendous job paving the way. Honestly, big shoes to fill coming in. But knowing that we are very limited with one tribal liaison for such a large and complex program, you know, instead of trying to constantly get more help, which would be great, I've been doing everything I can to try to create tools to act as kind of a force multiplier for our program. One of the things I've worked very hard on is, so we've got a tribal liaison intranet site that is accessible to all of our district employees. So I've been putting a lot of work into expanding that. So, you know, now that if they need the primary contact list for any of our tribal entities, they can go there. There's do-it-yourself training opportunities, webinars. It's served as kind of a one-stop shop now. There's even, you know, if they want to comment or tell me something they don't like, they have the opportunity to do that as well. There's a new employee resource page on there. So that's something I'm continually building. And so far, it's been a very effective tool to help kind of get that out. And on top of that, we were fortunate enough, the command of our district supported the creation of a tribal advisory group. So this is a multidisciplinary group, and these folks really help to get the word out and expand my reach across the district and different disciplinary areas. And that's huge, you know, and then that updates go through the corporate board, and hopefully we can continue to build this from there. So so those are a couple things. I've still got a long way to go in this program, but I've been fortunate enough to get a few things off the ground.
So fortunately for me, our tribal liaison office program was pretty robust when I took over the lead role here in Seattle. So I think one of the initiatives that we are focusing our efforts on is how to implement the 2023 consultation USACE consultation policy. So we have a project delivery team that is working on how to improve some of our processes throughout the district and making sure that our staff receive the tools and the training needed to make sure that we are following that policy to the best of our ability. And so that's still a work in progress. We are actively working on how to improve how we do business here, but that is an exciting area that we're focusing on. Otherwise, within projects, like project specific outcomes that I'm proud of for Seattle District is working on certain things like fish passage at our dams, because salmon restoration and recovery is such a important issue to the tribes in our region, and making sure we're upholding tribal treaty rights and reserve rights through making sure that we are doing our best to support the efforts for recovery and restoration of salmon.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa and Sean. And Melissa, you had mentioned, what the fish passage plan being in Seattle District, or I guess the Pacific Northwest, I guess in general, that sounds like one of the pressing tribal issues. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the other kind of themes or issues that you hear when you're speaking with tribes, working with tribes? And kind of the same question for you, Sean. Maybe you can speak to what you have seen in your role in Alaska Native communities.
So in the Pacific Northwest, I would say that the most pressing issues revolve around natural and cultural resources protection, making sure tribes have safe food, clean air, clean water, and also the protection of these resources. Some are treaty protected, some are just a tribal trust protection issue. Salmon in the Pacific Northwest is of crucial importance to the tribes. It's part of their culture and habitat. Degradation is happening faster than restoration. And so there is a huge push to put as many resources into restoration and protection as possible. And so a lot of our projects are focused on restoration. Fish passage, again, that's crucial to the survival of salmon at some of these dams. We have passage at a couple, but we have, I believe, three more studies going on right now to either figure out if fish passage is possible, or even going into designs to make sure that we can implement fish passage projects.
Yeah, thank you. There's several tribes and villages that have either relocated or are in the process of looking for alternatives to relocate their home, because of erosion, rising seas, melting sea ice, et cetera. And as you can imagine, this is problematic in so many ways, the least of which is leaving behind a cultural legacy, depending on where they're able to locate and the logistics involved with that. The food source, now I say subsistence, but most of the tribes we work with prefer wild food economy. Subsistence can be a difficult word up here, because people often look at subsistence as more of an option that people do up here to hunt and to fish. But with our indigenous communities, this is a way of life, and this is tied in directly with their culture. So you might hear me say wild food economy as a replacement for subsistence. But the caribou herds, many of the Chinook, the king salmon populations at the interior and some of which are extremely, maybe all-time lows. And we're trying to balance these concerns and needs with responsible resource development. Alaska, when it comes to resource development with oil and mines, critical minerals, this is one of, the biggest, most important places within the U.S. that some of these projects are going to be focused. And the Corps permitting authority and the regulatory division has a big part in that. So this is a lot of what I do when we're meeting with our tribal partners, is over concerns with these, because when we're looking at discussions for mitigation, for example, or compensatory mitigation that could be used for some of these projects. If the smallest thing goes wrong with some of these projects, the potential for a catastrophic failure for some of these wildlife populations would be in turn catastrophic for their culture and way of life. And again, many of these tribal communities are not connected to the road. Some of them have stores, but I mean, a gallon of milk is going to cost you $30. And so it's not something you can live off of, nor is it something they want to live off of, nor should they. So tying into that, part of our government-to-government consultation means utilizing Indigenous knowledge in the consideration of our actions. And while we have mechanisms for incorporating that into our review, where we have a major failure is we do not have a full-blown mechanism for protecting that information when it's sensitive information that they don't wish to be shared. So there's a FOIA process, and a lot of that can be pulled to FOIA. Some of it has protections if it's tied directly to a protected historical site. But there's a lot of flaws in that system. So when we're asking, them to share this information, we can't really do so in an honest way because, they understand that information could be shared with folks that perhaps they don't want to. And a lot of the information up here is passed along orally, and it's not written down. And again, this is a protected way of life. And so this is something we really need to work on. And again, going back to communications, of course, logistics of communications here in Alaska is very tricky on top of everything else. I guess I could go on all day about some of the challenges they face. And I wish we had, better ways to solve some of these issues. But I guess a big step forward for us has been at least listening and utilizing Indigenous knowledge, even though we still have ways to go.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think it's just important that we acknowledge what the challenges are. And I've really seen the tribal liaison role evolve for the last, 20 years or so, where now we are hearing these challenges. And maybe that creates some opportunities for us in the future to address some of these. So where do you see the future role of tribal liaisons as we look to the future?
So the future for tribal liaisons, I think we're on a really good trajectory. We've had a lot of support, but we still need that support from above, from the DC level all the way through the Corps to our commanders, and making sure that our district engineers are supportive of the tribal liaison role and that it's not just one of the other duties as assigned. There should be a tribal liaison for every district who can engage fully and look for ways to partner with tribes. And then support for trainings. Having opportunities for trainings and education and making sure that supervisors support that to continue the journey on the tribal liaison role.
Yeah, and I guess in addition, as most said, be great to see more funding and support dedicated to these roles so that we could have a more proactive approach. I'd love to see us focusing more on outreach and education versus reaction and mitigation. That said, tribal liaisons and the tribal partners have been fighting that fight for some time now. So, while we keep our fingers crossed and keep pushing for that, I think there's ways we can innovate in the meantime. I'm not terribly tech savvy, but thankfully some of the folks at the Corps that I work with are. An example of something as of late is, there is an initiative with the Army for an AI platform. And there's tools like AI that, at least in the early stages, could really provide a major lift of the administrative burden for some of our roles, which would then open us up to be more effective and put more focus on our relationships. So that's something I'm hopeful for, kind of independent of administration, but I still, much like Melissa, would hope that there's ultimately more emphasis and support from leadership so that we can really, again, get ahead of the curve and be more proactive in our relationship building.
I think I've heard both of you kind of reflect on how this tribal liaison role communicates with leadership and kind of within the Corps. And I'm thinking about this role and the opportunity to liaise with some of the tribal leadership as well. And I'm wondering if you could share maybe like a lesson or two that you have maybe picked up or learned from tribal leaders and communities that help shape your approach in this role.
Sure, I can start.
Okay.
Again, I've only been in the role for, roughly a year and a half, and I spoke to this a little bit earlier, but especially in the first few tribal government meetings, I came in very new, very passionate, and very focused on respect and culture, which is incredibly important coming into these meetings. What I did not put enough emphasis on, and I didn't honestly just know that much at the time, was being useful. So at the time, I could, I could give my part and speak very passionately about the federal trust responsibility. And of course, we have that in all of our templates and letters. But this is something we're very good at doing, is saying it. But ultimately, if I can't back that up with action, it's not really going the long way. My position can change every couple of years. So there's no reason for our tribal partners to put much emphasis in a relationship with myself and the district if it's nothing but empty words. So we have other programs, our NALAMP particularly, and some of our FUDS folks have more active, they don't necessarily always work directly with the governments, but the Alaska Native tribal partners and sometimes corporations. But what I've seen in that is these are programs that for the most part, are providing assistance, or some of our civil works authorities as well. So utilizing some of that and coming into these meetings and again, making sure that I'm equipped with options within our authority and outside, it's been incredibly useful, because especially let's say if we're going in for a regulatory meeting, there's a lot that, whether it's an EPA grant or just another agency that can assist, if I can go in there and provide that information for them, they're going to remember that. And that's gone a long way so far in building that trust. And again, just simple as being useful. It's something that I've learned has been incredibly important in building and keeping these relationships. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just build a little bit on the theme of being useful. In the tribal liaison role, we work with every branch in our districts. And so you need to know a little bit about everything. So you need to know about our civil works authorities, real estate, emergency management programs, a regulatory program, operations. And we also have a lot of staff turnover. So being able to bridge the gap when we might have some new staff, at a tribal meeting, and be able to kind of fill in some of the gaps that maybe are left is really important. Just making sure that enough information is being shared at those meetings to be useful, or being able to say, we will get back to you. We need to do a little more research and we will get back to you, and give them a date on when they can expect to get that information. I think one of the key themes that I've learned from tribal leaders is that they're doing everything they can to secure their traditional ways and culture. And they make their decisions based on 7 generations into the future. I hear this at almost every meeting, and it is inherent in every decision they make. So I think that one of the things that I can bring back to the core and to core staff is to make sure that I relay that information on how they're making decisions. And they're not just looking at the immediate effects of a project or an action. They're looking way into the future and advocating for their descendants. So that is one of the great lessons that I've learned from tribal leaders, and continue to try and bring that back to our core staff.
Well, thank you both. And I've been really excited to hear from you and hear your thoughts. Unfortunately, we're out of time today, but before we go, I was wondering if there's any final thoughts that you have for our listeners.
I think I've been pretty long-winded as it is, Aaron and Marie. So I won't have a whole lot to say. Honestly, I just really, really appreciate the opportunity to highlight this program and the Alaska District. I said we face, you know, a lot of unique challenges, but also so does the rest of our districts, as Melissa has pointed out. And it's such an important program, and I think we've really made a lot of progress here. And I just really hope we can continue to build on it. And it's great to have a little bit of a spotlight on it today. So thanks again.
Final thoughts for me. This is a very challenging position, and it can also be extremely rewarding. I've been in some very tense tribal meetings with leadership on both sides. And at the end of the day, it just comes down to a conversation. People want to be heard. People want to try and work together to come to resolution. And typically at the end, tribes are grateful that the government is showing up and they're willing to have those conversations and they're willing to come to the table. And just getting there is half the battle. So just don't shy away from conversations. These are very complex and sensitive issues, but at the end of the day, they're conversations that need to be had to move things forward. So that's what I try and help our staff with as we go into some of the tense or uncomfortable conversations that may be had.
Well, thank you, Sean and Melissa, for sharing your stories and telling us more about the role of the tribal liaisons at the Corps. We appreciate you and your insights. To our listeners, we want to hear from you, what topics are important to you, and who you're interested in hearing from. Until next time, be safe, be innovative, and tell your story.
Thanks for joining us for this Inside the Castle podcast. To provide your feedback, email us at cw.infrastructure.team@usace.army.mil. Stay tuned for additional Inside the Castle podcasts as we explore life inside the Corps and revolutionize civil works together.